The Rising Coaches Podcast is brought to you by Just Play Sports Solutions. Are you still giving out paper scouting reports to your team? I'm talking about the two pieces of paper stapled together with the player's picture on it and a couple sentences about how they like to shoot from three or is a straight line driver. We can do so much more with our scouting reports, and Just Play can help you do it. How does it work? Your players download an app right to their phone, which they're on 24/7, right? Through that app, you can upload all kinds of content, not just scouting reports, but video analysis, game plans. You can assign who they're going to be guarding and let them watch personnel clips. You can make it interactive. You can have your players answering questions. You can throw in quizzes, and you can monitor their use, who's using it, and for how long. And the best part about Just Play is it's cheaper than their competitors. It is a no-brainer. For more information, visit JustPlaySolutions.com. Just Play Sports Solutions. Teach faster, prepare better. Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon. Really appreciate you guys tuning in. Today we are going back to the Rising Coaches Conference. This is from August 4th at Marion University in Indianapolis. Steve Payne, head coach of Tennessee Tech University. Hope you guys enjoy, and we will be releasing more speakers in the upcoming weeks.
Trying to make sure I get everything in. I'm a little different than these other guys. I don't have a lot of computer stuff. If I have anything on a computer, that dude back there's made it or whatever. I do know how to turn it on now, and I'm a little older, and I sat there, and it's kind of depressing because I realize now I'm that old coach now. I'm an old guy that just sits around and tells stories and wants to hear, and that's a hard thing to accept every now and then. Little bit about me and everything, and I've listened to where everybody's been around and who all they've played for, who all they've worked for and played for, and just to tell you how different everything can be and how much your journey can be is your own. And I was a big-time player, and I played for guys. I want you to raise your hand if you heard of these guys. I played for Bill Peterson. Y'all ain't heard of Bill? I played for Scott Jolly. Nobody heard of Scott? And I played for Charlie Finsky. Those three guys. And I'm telling you, they're all great coaches in their own right and great people. But then I worked for a guy named Rick McCormick. I went for somebody, raise your hand. Since you know these guys, raise your hand. J.D. Barnett. Now, shame on you. You should know that one. Huh? Yeah, Cody. There we go. I'm glad. I was going to be embarrassed right there if somebody didn't know that one. And then I worked for a guy named Happy Osborne. Now, some of you guys might know him because he sends out faxes all over the place. And then for Mike Sutton. And what I'm saying is I love, like, playing Michigan State and Coach Izzo, one of the classiest, best guys, treat you wonderful, beat your brains if they can. But they have their own. But I learned a lot from those other guys. The best coach, the biggest arenas are where you're at right now. The biggest arena you can be in is the one you're in. I've coached junior college. I've coached small college. And guys, why did you coach? Where did you come from? Why did you want to be a coach? I was going to be a high school coach, no doubt. In my mind, I grew up from the time I realized I wasn't going to play in the NBA, which was pretty early, I was going to coach high school. All right? And that's, my dad was a coach in Kentucky, small town. When coaches were big deals, I sat around, listened to them, tell stories, drink coffee, smoke cigarettes. Everything I did was with coaches. And I looked up to my dad like he could do no wrong, and to other coaches like that. And all I ever wanted to do is please a coach as a player. So I get out, and I'm at Rio Grande. Anybody know where Rio Grande is in Ohio? Young guys? And for the life of me, Coach Lawhorn was an old, longtime coach. He's in the Hall of Fame in Ohio, high school basketball coach. Great guy. My assistant coach, Jeff Wannum, my first year at Union, was his assistant there. So I'm living in suburban Cincinnati after graduation, doing landscaping, going working camps whenever I can, just trying to get in the business. And to know that you're always interviewing, I'm one of my things is you're always interviewing. I'm working Rio's camp for $150 4 days, okay, for Coach Lanham. And I love being around basketball, and I like camps. I still like camps. We have some of the biggest camps in the South because I like camps. I like being around high school coaches. I like being around young people. I like camps. That guy right there, we better have big camps next year because now not only do I like camps, but I like making some money off camp. All right, but so I'm working at Rio's camp, and I've been there 3 days. Coach Lauren pulls me in there. He says, "Look, Scott Circleville just called me. They're looking for a coach. Think you might be interested in it?" yeah, I mean, I'm 22 years old, 21 years old. Yeah, I'm fired up, ready to go. And he said, my mother lives in Dayton. He said, well, go home, get you a jacket and tie, and be there at this time. He called them. They spent the next day prepping me for the interview. The guy just takes his whole day and spends the whole day with me just prepping me for the interview. And I don't know what I'm doing. So I go interview, get there. Had a great interview, I felt like. They told me, Ron, hey, we had a young coach here last year, had an inappropriate relationship with a student. We'd like to have an older guy. Okay. So I leave the league, but I'm still working landscape and working camps. And oh, I get involved with another job. I get a GA spot. On Thursday afternoon in July, he says, hey, I want you to be my GA down here at Union University. I'd already been down there to look at it, and I took it. On Friday morning, Circleville High School calls me and offers me the head coaching job. Had that gone the other way, I'm telling you where I'd be. I'd be either Ohio coaching or Kentucky coaching high school, and I'd been just as happy as I could be. I love basketball. I love coaching young people. I didn't get it to be a Division I head coach. Now, I'm not like a lot of people in that area. I thought it'd be really cool when I got to be head coach to be Lou Cunningham, who was a longtime head coach at Campbellsville University that passed away. I thought Lou Cunningham was bigger than life because he coached at Campbellsville. And it's where my father had played. So I didn't have the same background. I've never been an administrative guy. And so as you go through my experience, I've been a little different than some of you guys. And different meaning much, much worse. Okay, I'm not as good as I need to be on a computer. I'm not as organized off the floor as I need to be. All right, and that he's laughing because he knows it's true. And Gus gets fired 5 times a week, by the way. So I take the job at Union University, and I work for a guy named Rick McCormick. And to be honest, when I got there, it was a bad situation. And the guy's a great guy; we're still friends. But the guy's AD and the head women's coach hated him, and that guy's in the Hall of Fame. And so it was a short-term deal. I knew it was coming in. But what'd you learn? Well, I learned to listen, okay, and I learned about loyalty. Because I had all kinds of opportunities to stab a guy in the back, all right? And I mean, like, at 22 years old, ridiculous claims, but real kind of opportunities to stab a guy in the back. And I wish I'd handled some things better, but I never betrayed him. I learned to listen, I learned about loyalty, and I learned my craft. The league I coached in that year, I'm the only assistant coach, and the league I coached in has Don Meyer at Lipscomb University, Rick Bird at Belmont. You guys won't know these other guys, you'll know those. Charlie Leonard was the head coach at Christian Brothers University, very good coach. He's been LSU as assistant for the last few years. Now he's a head coach back in Memphis. Mike Nienaber, one of the best basketball minds you can ever be around, is the head coach at Christian Brothers University now. He was at Bethel at the time. So we have a long list of guys that you really had to prepare and to play and learn basketball. When you talk about having to go in and scout, I did every scout. Of course, I did 16, I did every scout. Okay, I mean, and not just in the film. That's driving to Nashville, watching the game, driving back, driving to Memphis, watching the game, driving back. So learning a lot at that time. And I'm going to tell you what some of the best things I did and learning. And some of this stuff is what I wish I knew. And some of the stuff is I'm really glad I learned from certain guys. Rick McCormick, we would drive. Everything's drive. Well, I would drive. He would sleep. His feet stunk. He snored. But he'd sit over and he'd sleep all night. But when he was awake, he'd pull out them old books. And you guys haven't seen. You got to be a little older to know what these books are. Back before we had everything on our phones, computers, we had little books that had directories, college directories. You might see them laying around, old relics laying around there. All right, they'd have coaching listings of all their athletic directors, their enrollment, their size of their arena name, their high school, their head coach, their assistant coaches, all listed. And he'd grab a book. And this is how little I knew. Now, if you were inside about two states, I knew who you were. If you coached small college basketball or high school basketball, I knew all of them. But once I got to Tennessee, I didn't know anybody. And I certainly didn't know any of those junior college coaches in Oklahoma, Missouri, Kansas, Texas, where we started recruiting. So we'd go on the road, and he'd say, okay, who's the head coach at Carl Albert College? And if I didn't know it, he'd chast me for 15 minutes. I had to know who the head coach at every junior college was in our area, every Division I coach. I mean, that was just we'd drive for 12 hours, and that's what we did. Who was the head coach at Texas Pan American? Now it's Rio Grande Valley. Had to know it. Had not only that with Division I guys, but where they had been before. So what that enabled me to do, and I wanted to please. Now, I'm a pleaser. I want my guy to be happy, my coach, my boss. I mean, I want them to be happy. So what that enabled me to do is whenever I went to Ron Murphy at Carl Albert Junior College in Oklahoma, who I'd never met, and he's 60 years old, all right? Got to learn to listen. He don't want to hear what I know. He wants me to tell me stories. But I knew where he'd been. I'd go in there, hey, coach, yeah, and I'm watching Gary Henderson play. Coach, you were at Cali County before this? I knew his entire history. Well, here's a 22-year-old, 23-year-old guy, and all of a sudden he knows where Ron Murphy is. That guy's a great coach. He's just an old-school coach. Coached junior college ball until he retired. Great basketball guy. Great guy. But not many people knew his stuff, so – we ended up getting Gary Henderson at Northwestern State a couple years later because I knew his history. I invested in him. And not only did I have to do that with him, I had to do it with all those guys. And that helped me. I mean, know who you're going. So when one guy knows a guy named J.D. Barnett, okay, J.D. Barnett was that close to being the head coach at University of Kentucky in the 80s. It's not that long ago for a guy like me. I'm an old guy now, okay? He coached top 20 teams for years at VCU, top 20 teams at Tulsa. I mean, that close to being the head coach of Kentucky. All right, so like when I'm saying that, I think you ought to invest as a young person. I would tell John, you got to know who's in the business and where they've been. When you walk in someplace, you should be prepared. Like when you go, you get that opportunity to recruit, or you get that opportunity to meet a coach, you meet somebody at the Final Four, don't just meet them and think, man, that guy's the coach at whatever State U. Next time you meet him, know he's been at State U plus Ivy Tech plus this place plus that place. That means a lot to old coaches. Okay, I'm an old coach now. I don't care what Jonathan Ortiz has to know about me all the time. I want him to listen to me, and that's hard for some people because you guys work so hard. That dude worked for me before. He worked so hard, okay? He looks ugly and red, can't help that, but he worked so hard, and you want people to know that, hey, I know this stuff. I'm just as smart as that guy. I can do the job. And you want them to know it so bad that you end up being self-promoters, and that's not really what you want to be. You want somebody else to promote you, okay? Let older – and that's one of the first things I learned that's helped me more than anything is I just listen. And that's hard. As a young kid, as a young coach, I was in position to be around people. And, man, shut your mouth and listen. They want to tell you. They want to pour into you what they've learned over the years. Every old coach does. They want to tell you the things they've been through and what they've done. And you just got to listen. And you don't have to say a lot. I remember in my second job, we ended up getting fired at Union, which I could see coming. And, you know, again, it's a little different time now, okay? I'm an old coach now, so I'm working camps all over the country. You guys network a little differently, okay? But, again, the guys I networked with in my 20s are the guys I'm still close. Since I've gotten married, had kids, I don't do as good a job of networking. But them dudes I networked with back then, we're still close. They're guys that will still help me, and really help me. Anyway, so we were driving all over the country working camps, and I worked Rick Ball's. Camp was called Ball Stars in Pensacola, and I was back then. I was coaching. I'm on the sideline, and J.D. Barnett had his. That's back when he had the restricted earnings coach. So I'm 23, 24 years old, and if you guys wish I could play a video of the guy up here. You don't know demanding, demeaning, and hard to deal with until you see Coach Barnett. I mean, he's still that way. When I call him now, he's sick, ill, and if I call him, it can't be. I'm just checking him. It's what do you want? I mean, every time I call him, it's and he's brutal. Well, the guy that had that job had quit in 3 weeks. So he's on the road, and the guy I know, he's with him, and he watches us work the camp. I don't know he's watching me. I have no idea. On Friday night, he's watching the kids in my team in camp play and watching me work camp. Saturday morning, same thing. Saturday night, says, hey, let's go to dinner. So I'm, again, a guy that puts basketball coaches and coaches in general on up on Mount Rushmore, and this guy's asked me to dinner, and I go to dinner, and Tim Floyd's there, and Jim Walters is there, and there's all these Division I coaches, and I'm thinking, wow. And, man, I sat up and listened the entire meal and walked out, and he said, I'd like you to come down here and work at Northwestern State. And I actually at that time had Coach Shoemate, who had been the coach at Seymour at the time, had offered me the same position at his place, and Cal Luther had offered me the same job at UT Martin. And I went to Louisiana just because that guy had been around so many other people, and I felt, man, it'd be great. And he was going to give me this apartment to live in, and I had a free place to live. And I went there, and it was a locker room in Prather Coliseum that had rats and no windows. And it did have an old stinky couch they put in there and a little bed from the dorm and a TV. So I lived there. Been there about 2 weeks, and the summer school gets out, so they shut the air conditioning off in the arena. And Louisiana in August is not easy to have the air conditioning shut off in the arena. So I ended up staying with them for another 2 weeks, but just kind of, as you make it through it, it was all worth it. I mean, and you talk about being demanding, and I was talking about promoting and wanting to tell everybody how good you are. What I want to tell you is your job as assistant coach is to promote the head coach. And that's a little different. Your job is to make that guy look good. His job is to promote you. Okay? And that's not always easy to do. There's sometimes we're wrong. That's not the easiest thing. There were times that I took a lot of cussings from Coach Barnett that was, you know, there's things you got to do as assistant coach, and I think he knew I was doing them. We didn't have a lot of really good players, and when we did, Coach was, I mean, we did everything at 7:01, he'd won enough games, been around enough. If it was 1:02, and he said the bus is leaving at 1:02, at 1:02 and 1 second, the bus is leaving. It doesn't matter if you've got one player on the bus, he's leaving. All right. Well, it's a big campus. I mean, there's guys sometimes get caught coming in, and we had a really good player, and if somebody would look like they were going to be late, I stayed back in Prather Coliseum and hid until I knew everybody's on the bus. Now, our guys didn't mess with Coach. Most of the time, they were there plenty early. But there was a couple of times I was in hiding because he couldn't leave me because I had all the information. I mean, I knew where we were staying, where we were going, what time of practice time. He didn't, nobody else knew it but me. And so there was a lot of times I took some cussings over that, but it was best for our program. And I still dealt with the kids without betraying Coach ever. But from there, I did go back to Kentucky and work for a lot of you guys know Happy, and it was a great opportunity to work in a program that won a lot of games. And you go to a deal where there's a tremendous amount of pride in your program. If you lose a game, like everybody in town, everybody on campus, students, girls, everybody wants to know what happened. Don't matter if the other team you lost to is the best team in the country, they want to know what's wrong. And that was a lot of fun, a lot of learning experiences there. And would have stayed there forever, probably. And got an opportunity to be the head coach in junior college out in Texas. I thought it was great. Didn't realize that Midland was better and Odessa was better and South Plains was way better and everybody else was better. It was great. I got my brains beat in for 2 years, but that was really a lab. I mean, for me, that 2 years, had some good players. But that 2 years in Texas, 20 hours from my home, 20 hours from any family. I'd been married not too long, had a young baby. I had a baby. Like, we're 20 hours from everybody. And that 2 years, I will tell you, were the most uncomfortable 2 years I've ever had as a coach. And the best 2 years ever in my life for my family, for my coaching career. And I'll explain. Didn't have any money because we didn't make any money. And if we did have any money, we were so far from anything to spend it on, it didn't matter. So we're 75 miles from Amarillo. And if anybody's ever been to Amarillo, Amarillo's not that nice. So it was a great 2 years. In 2006, when Coach Sutton got sick, and I coached the team, we were pretty good. We wouldn't have been good if it hadn't been for the 2 years out in West Texas, for the 2 years at Frank Phillips that I learned coaching and how to demand things and really made some mistakes and got to learn from those. So then I go to Tennessee Tech, and one of my other things I wanted to tell you guys is, as far as you're always interviewing, Coach Sutton and I known each other when I was at Georgetown. He was a guy that loved basketball. And how many of you guys have ever met Coach Sutton? You guys know who I'm talking about when I say Mike Sutton. I know, John, you have, but you might know Mike. Raise your hand. Okay, you know he's in a wheelchair now. And just to show you how precious it is and how easy it is to be taken away from you. My third year at Tennessee Tech, we win the league. Coach is at Portsmouth. He's watching the player in our league playing at the NBA camp. Calls me, he's not feeling good. Doesn't know what's going on. Okay, Coach, I'll check you later. That was Friday. Called me on Saturday night. He's listen up. I mean, this is exactly what he said. I'm in the hospital. Here's what I have. Here's what's going to happen. You just take care of everything. Don't worry about me. You do what you think's right, and we'll be okay. I don't know when I'm going to be out of this. And he said, I'm having trouble talking. I'm having trouble dialing the phone. So I don't know when you and I will talk again. Okay, so now it goes. I think Coach's going to be in the hospital for a week or two. So we're doing everything. Then I got to hire a guy. And so Coach got it. That was April. He got out of the hospital in December. He's still in a wheelchair. And you know what? And you talk about trying. And I'm just – this is not – to get Mike Sutton paid every day. Coach was never there at all from April until December 12th. Okay? And – I would go by and see him. He eventually transferred to a physical rehab hospital right by campus. So practice would be over with. I would take the video from practice back when we still had VHS stuff, and I'd put it in his room, and I'd just play it. He'd be asleep, or he'd be watching. If he wanted to watch, he'd watch. He'd sleep half the time. He'd sleep. But that way, I could always say, Mike Sutton's calling the shots. And Mike Sutton never missed a paycheck. And I tried to, without question, give Mike Sutton 100% of the credit for any success our team had that year. All right, and I didn't feel like it was my job to promote what I'm doing. I felt it was my job to promote Mike Sutton. And that's what we did as a staff, and that's what we did. And some things weren't easy. but we had a good year. And I'm going to tell you, because of that, not only because of that and some of the, I developed a lot of goodwill from people on campus because I put coach first. I'm a very big believer, and if you take care of what another man's, you'll get your own. If you're faithful over a little, you'll get more. I'm a big believer in those things. And I've had a lot of mentors outside of coaching as well as I've gotten older. And, man, I'm telling you, that stuff has been poured into me since I've been at Tennessee Tech. And, I don't wish Coach either. I mean, I wish we fight half the time when he was sick, and we'd fight. We still fight. We talk once a week now. But the best thing, and, you know, he'll tell me, he said, you wish, you know, and I've always told him we fought when he came back some. I said, I always wish that you'd never gotten sick, Coach. That's the biggest thing, the biggest regret I've ever had. Because he hadn't got sick. That, talk about a guy that was ready to go. Guy won a national championship at Kentucky, worked for Tubby Smith, just won a conference. We were going to be even better the next year. I mean, he was getting ready to get one of those jobs, big-time jobs. And but again, it wasn't my job to promote me. My job was to promote Mike Sutton. And I'm just telling you, if you do what's right, people notice. And this is not a business that's easy to do. This is a business that promotes selfishness, okay? And it's tough to not take that bait. I mean, how many staffs, you guys been on big staffs, how many staffs really get along? That's a rare, rare occurrence when you got staffs that really, really like, and their wives, really, really like each other and get along. I mean, I won't hire a person if I think he's one of those guys, and there are those guys out there, because you guys know him. Well, I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. Won't hire a guy. Just simply won't do it. You know, it's a wee deal. Okay? So, all right, I'm gonna give you a few more of these. I know we've been here a while, and I'm going to tell you just some of the things that I – number one, I think, listen. I've already told you that. Number two, this is a political job. No matter what you think and no matter how you think it, this is a political job. And the easiest way to screw it up is by talking too much. When I was getting ready to be named head coach, I had it. I mean, the day I got the job, Coach Sutton's in the office of AD. They called me in my office, hey, you need to come downstairs. Come downstairs, they look at me, and AD looks at me and says, Mike said if we'll give you the job, he'll retire right now, and we decide to do that, and it's your job. Wow, okay. And, I mean, that's how I got the job, because the guy that I stood by when he was sick told the guy, you need to hire him, I'll quit if you hire him. He'd been in the wheelchair for 6 years coaching. And, it still kind of breaks me up when I talk about it now. But one of my mentors in town who has passed away had sent just now, told he one of the things, as soon as I left there, told my wife, went to see a guy named Paul Ramsey. He looked at me and says, just be quiet, let it happen. And he said, no matter what, the only thing you can do by talking about it, screw it up. Somebody get wind of it, talk, take you out with somebody else, just let it happen. And he taught me more than anything else that everything we do is political. And you know, if you don't believe it, look at it. You're just like a politician. You got to get the job. Then you got to try to do as good as you can with the job without making as many people mad until they get rid of it. Okay? I mean, it is a political job, and the best thing to do is keep it quiet. Okay? Talking about always interviewing. I was on the phone up today. Some of you guys know Dustin Kearns, and Dustin came to head coach at Presbyterian. And Dustin, our first staff at Tennessee Tech that coached up together, was got Scott Cherry, who's head coach at High Point. G.G. Smith, head coach at Loyola Maryland, myself and Dustin Kearns, our ops guy, who's now head coach at Presbyterian. And if you know Dustin is everything. I'm not. He's classy. He's smart. He's everything. He's everything you want. I mean, Dustin got the big. He's going to his hairdresser. I go to a barber. He goes to a hairdresser. All right. I mean, he is the greatest guy. And if he tells us when we were talking about his deal, and so he's at Wofford, and there's this old guy, that's a retired golf coach at Wofford, comes to all the games. Probably 78 the whole time, he said. And he said, just been there 5 years, talked to him every day. Didn't know who he was, knew his name. My wife talked to him. We became friends. He said, I just thought he was a Wofford grad, liked basketball at Wofford. Presbyterian job comes open. Presbyterian president calls him. He said, you know Don, I think it was O'Connell. He said, yeah, I know him. Yeah, he was my roommate in college. And Dustin didn't get the job because that guy was his roommate. But he could have lost the job because that guy was his roommate. All right, and all he did was do the right thing, treat the guy who was interested in their players and their program the way they should be treated. And that's who he is. If you know him, that's who he is. And that's kind of – when I say you're always interviewing, that's what I'm talking about. All right. Next thing is you got to know why you coach And then I got to know why I hire guys. Okay? Why did I hire Gus? Now, I'll ask myself that 1,000 times a day. But the truth is, he's going to take care of me. He makes my job easy. He cares about what happens to me, my family. He's going to work. He's not going to cause problems for me. I can cause my own self problems. He's not going to cause problems. He just goes to work. You know, I had one guy that I was really considering, and I'm almost regretting. Well, not almost. I am regretting. You got to watch who you associate yourself with. You got to, you know, talk about culture, and you got to do the culture. Culture is every day. Like, one of the reasons I think we've been kind of up and down is I've not fought like I think I have to fight right now after research doing it for my culture every day. We've got good kids, but fighting for that culture every day needs to establish consistency. That's an everyday thing. And you guys have to watch who you want. Who do you want in your circle? You'll always have people that are your friends. How many guys? I put it this way. There's guys I always consider that who are my friends. I got a lot of friends, okay? I want those guys that when somebody's talking trash over here, talking stupid over here, that won't just turn away and not join in. I want those guys to say, "You're an idiot, that's wrong. I'm not." I want those guys to stand up and put a stop to it, ready to fight for it. That's why he's on my staff. That's why he's full time on the road. Not because I think he's going to be a great recruiter. I don't know yet. I think he's going. I know he's a good coach. I've seen him do that. Anyway, you got to know who you coach. Now, those people don't matter that say anything, that talk the trash, but I want somebody who'll stand up for you every time. Not just every now, not just go away from it, but just stand up, put a stop to it. Had a guy that I was talking about a job. Called, and he's like, "You know, this guy said this, and that guy said that." You know, I said, "I don't care." The truth is, that's not who I coach for. I don't coach to please them. All right? I don't coach. You got to know who you coach for and why you coach. Okay? I got an audience of one. That's what I'm going to coach for. I don't want my wife to be happy. I want my kids to be happy. But I don't coach to please everybody, and you can't. You know, and I put it this way: there's a guy when I was in high school that won a state championship Kentucky named Dave Fraley, and Dave's a good guy, a really good coach, and he was a great recruiter in high school. He always had guys move in and move out, and we could never beat him. And I just told him, we were playing golf a couple years ago. I said, "Coach," I said, "I don't mean this bad." I said, "But every time I heard your name in Russell County, it was always Dave effing Fraley." And he just looked at me and says, "Boy, they don't boo a nobody," and started laughing. It's the biggest compliment I could ever give him. He doesn't, like, what people say have no impact. And I'm going to tell you that as a coach, once you get to that spot, they don't boo a nobody. If we're talking about it, take it as a great compliment. Don't let it ever hurt your feelings. I'm the most sensitive dude in the world. Stuff drives me crazy. I don't want anybody to dislike me. Don't want anybody to think bad of me. Don't want to mistreat anybody. But the truth is, you can't please people. Okay? And so you have to please whatever your value is and whatever you believe in, that's what you got to please. Now, for me, it's I coach for one. All right? And so that would be something else I would want to put on there. Next thing, coach, do you have any advice or anything? Don't beat yourself. Just don't beat yourself. There's a lot of smart guys in this room right now. There's a lot of great coaches. There's a lot of potential. Right now, there's somebody that'll screw themselves up for falsifying an expense account for $30 or $40 extra dollars. You'll screw up your career. For one night drinking, you'll screw up your career. The wrong woman will screw up your career. How many coaches do you know that kind of lost their way during a divorce? And you guys aren't old enough to probably get there yet. I am. All right? You'll never see Coach Payne out in the club. All right, and trust me, I am no angel. Never been, and like when I was your age, I've probably been the first one there before. I was talking to a guy today. He says, "Don't give away half your retirement. Don't do what I did. Take care of your family." Wow, I never thought of it that way. That's part of it. I mean, beyond that, and I know you guys, the guys at Northern Kentucky, they got some colorful language and stuff up there. I know Chris Shoemate taught you how to cuss right there, but I'm telling you, times are changing. Like, coaches, the administrators don't always have your back. Like, my advice, take the F-bomb out of your language. And I have basketball-induced Tourette's. Like, I'm telling you right now, you get me in practice, I'll start scratching my head, and there'll stuff come out of my mouth that you've never heard before in your life. And I'm like, man, I can't believe I just said that. All right? But they don't always have your back. You hope they do, but I would take my advice, take the F-bomb out of your language. Take some other things out of your language. You can coach without it. You can get it. I have a hard time, but you guys are smarter than me and you're better than me in that. And I am. I mean, I'm trying.